This is your host, Michelle, and you're listening to Old TV with a New Twist. Let's see what classic television show we're watching and talking about this month. Everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of Old TV with a New Twist. I'd like to welcome back my co-host for his 11th time, my husband, Ted.
Jeez, 11 already. Wow. This is which one? What number is this?
73.
73, and I've only done 11?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so all the whining is not necessary or called for at all. Okay. It's always all right. Fun.
Yep.
today, we are here to talk about Scarecrow and Mrs. King. It's a 1980s crime drama. It was requested by our listener, Jody. So, Jody, I hope you're listening. This goes out to you. Now, we're going to talk a little bit if we have any history with this show. I'm going to tell you, I knew of it back in the 80s. I maybe saw commercials, advertisements. I knew it was on. I have never seen an entire episode of this show. What about you?
Ditto. Okay. I know about it just because it was on TV, but
right.
No.
We were busy in the 80s. We were not...
I was out and about, man.
Yeah. I was out and about with you for a lot of that.
This is true.
He could drive home perfectly having drank 5 Long Island iced teas, by the way, with me on his lap. 80s.
This is true. I did that.
Not anymore. That was when we were young and stupid.
Young and stupid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So the show stats, this show ran for 4 seasons from 1983 to 1987, 88 episodes. Now, we're going to talk about the actors who played the characters. I'll just tell you a little trivia about each actor. First of all, Mrs. Amanda King is played by Kate Jackson. She has 60 IMDb credits. She is best known as Sabrina Duncan on Charlie's Angels. Now, Charlie's Angels was considered jiggle TV in the 70s.
Did they invent that term?
That term is self-explanatory and was invented for Charlie's Angels because I think it was the first time women went without bras. But Sabrina Duncan is the one, she was the smart one. Mm-hmm. And I just want to ask you, because was she pretty? And you got to realize, she's standing between Jacqueline Smith and Farrah Fawcett. I mean.
Yeah, suffice it to say, I did not have a poster of Kate Smith. Kate Jackson. Kate Smith. Jeez. Didn't have Kate Smith either, but Kate Jackson on my wall.
Yes.
No.
Okay. And no, because you had Farrah Fawcett in the red bathing
That's
suit.
That's correct.
Many people did. But here's the thing. I think Jacqueline Smith was the beauty of the show.
One of the prettiest women ever.
Ever.
Yes.
And she still is. I follow
and
her on
still
Instagram.
Is.
She looks like she might have had work, but she had good work.
Correct.
So she looks really good. But Kate Jackson was the first angel to be cast. And she was the person who came up with the show's name.
Okay. Wow.
So there you go. She turned down Meryl Streep's role in Kramer versus Kramer in 1979 because of scheduling conflicts with Charlie's Angels. Now, Meryl Streep went on to win an Oscar for that. Mm-hmm. And Kate Jackson was like, I can't keep losing out on roles that are going to win me Oscars to do this little TV show. So it prompted her to leave the series to concentrate on her big screen movie career. So she left and she went on to win a string of 0 Oscars.
I was going
to
say, how'd that work out for her?
0 Oscars.
0. Not so well.
But her first acting role was on the original Dark Shadows.
Yes.
Big Dark Shadows fan here at Old TV with a New Twist. Episode 56 I did with Emily about Dark Shadows. Kate Jackson was Daphne Collins and Daphne Harridge. Mm-hmm. So it's a little roundy around here for Old TV with a New Twist. We talked about her first acting job, and then we're going on through, and we will be doing Charlie's Angels. So, Ted, you can start getting excited now.
Yep. It's so funny because I have my notes here.
Jiggle TV.
And I was getting Jacqueline Smith and Kate Jackson confused. I wrote in my notes, Kate Smith.
Like, oh, Lord.
No, I know.
I apologize for anything that's going to happen throughout this pod. God only knows what he's going to throw out, y'all.
Let me tell you people out there the pressure that I have.
Oh, please. Oh, here he goes. Here goes the whining. Here goes the whining.
Nope, no pressure.
No pressure. Yeah. Okay, next we have Lee Stetson. The character is played by, he's the Scarecrow. He's played by Bruce Boxleitner. And Bruce Boxleitner has 139 acting credits. And I'm like, wow, I didn't think he had that many. But when I looked at it, it was like the Tron TV series and video games. And he played like Captain John Sheridan on 80,000 renditions of Babylon 5 TV series and movies. And I never, I'm not into that science fiction-y kind of stuff. I'm like, but he did have... You know, some miniseries movies. I saw him in Bare Essence, which is a miniseries that I love from the early 80s. But I guess his acting's good. But let's face it, Bruce Boxleitner is eye candy. You know, he's a good looking guy. Yeah. I did not have a poster of him in a red bathing suit on my wall. But I remember thinking he's a nice looking man. Mm-hmm. So then there's Dorothy Dottie West, who was Amanda's mom, played by the actress Beverly Garland, with 197 acting credits. Wow. Beverly Garland has won the day. I don't know if you remember her from My Three Sons. She married the dad, Stephen Douglas. She played Barbara Douglas.
I remember the show, but no, I don't remember.
In the later seasons. Mm-hmm. In the early 1970s, she opened the Beverly Garland Howard Johnson's Resort Lodge, a 154-room hotel near Universal Studios. And I can remember, I read a lot of Hollywood biographies and all, you know, and people always talk about staying at the Beverly Garland, or this was held at the Beverly Garland. And I remember, wow, that hotel is named for the actress. And then I found out she owned it. And she was best friends with Bruce Boxleitner until her death in 2008 at the age of 82.
I did
so
read
they
that.
Were
yep.
off-screen friends. Mm-hmm. And then we have Frances Desmond, the co-worker at the agency. She works with Scarecrow. And her name is Martha Smith, and she has 37 acting credits. But I have two words. Mm-hmm. Animal House.
Yep.
She played Babs and uttered the immortal line, "That boy is a P-I-G pig." And you'll like this. She was the Playboy Playmate of the Month in July 1973.
Cool.
And look, guys, my husband's not a pig. He's just a man. Okay. Yeah, I just say this because he's just a man. Okay. That's all I can say. Billy Melrose was the boss at the agency. He was played by Mel Stewart, 87 acting credits. And he's one of those guys, you look at him and you're like, God, I've seen him everywhere.
Right.
You know, he never like had a starring role in anything, but he had a supporting role or a guest starring role in tons of stuff. And he's a third degree black belt, so don't mess with him.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And that's the main cast. We did watch the pilot episode. And I have to say, on this show, we watch pilots a lot because I'm watching it with people who have never seen the shows. In this case, I haven't seen the show. Mm-hmm. And pilot episodes are great because they set up the series. They set up the characters. We know what's going on here. You can't jump in the middle and find out. Now, I do know most series improve over time. The writing improves, the characters develop, they'll change out things that aren't working, and it gets better. So I know sometimes the pilot isn't the best thing to do, but for our intent and purposes here at Old TV with a New Twist, we're going to stick with pilots until we run out of pilots. Then we'll start doing other
stuff. I would say this is a pretty good pilot.
Very good pilot, yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, season one, episode one, it's called The First Time, aired October 3rd, 1983. Ted, who was president in
1983?
Or Reagan. I knew you'd know.
I know that one.
The kids are young. They don't know. Right. But I wanted to ask that here because Ronald Reagan is important here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when I do my research, and I do a lot of research, a lot of them said it is a Reagan-esque crime drama. And I'm like, Reagan-esque? Yeah, is that a thing? But I'm like, I guess because it's tied to the time, because you can tell this is during the Cold War.
Yep.
We got the Russians and the KGB behind everything. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mentions of that. So I think that's a way to pinpoint this moment in time, calling it Reagan-esque. Like Downton Abbey was considered an Edwardian era show, because that was just to pinpoint the time. Now, what we're going to do in line with our new format is I'm going to tell you the synopsis of what happened in this episode. We're not going to break it down scene by scene. Just going to give you the synopsis. Then we are going to discuss this episode and this show in general terms. But I promise we're going to cover probably everything you'd be thinking or wanting to know. Okay, here we go, Ted.
Here we go.
Amanda King is a divorced housewife who lives in a cozy home in the Washington, D.C. suburb of Georgetown. She lives with her mother, Dottie, and her young sons, and she is dating a meteorologist named Dean. While she is at the train station seeing Dean off, Mrs. King is handed a package by a secret agent, Lee Stetson, with the code name Scarecrow, instructs her to board the train and give the package to a man with a red hat. But she is unable to complete the assignment because, unfortunately, when she boards the train, the entire car is filled with men with red hats. They're wearing those fez hats. Looks like a Shriners convention. Yeah. So she still has the package. Meanwhile, the secret agent meets with his boss, Billy Melrose, and his co-worker, Francis Desmond.
Is it Francis or Francine?
Francine. Francine Desmond, but I like to call her Babs from Animal Babs, House. Yep. And tells them what happened. Now, he works for a nondescript agency in Washington. Is it the FBI? Is it the CIA? We really don't know. We learned that there is a leak in their organization and that Russian intelligence is always one step ahead of them, and four agents have been killed. But the package, supposedly, is the answer to plugging the leak and to stopping the killing. So Scarecrow has to track down the woman he gave the package to. Inadvertently, he gets her involved with the case. And there's a lot of meetings and mishaps. This could be called a caper. But when Stetson is captured by his pursuers and marked for elimination, Mrs. King ends up solving the secret behind the package, finding and rescuing Stetson, taking down the bad guys, and making it home in time to set the table for dinner. True?
True.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, every show we watch almost that I watch for this podcast, they have a B story going on. Something, some little small story embedded in it. And usually if it has to do with somebody's work, the show, they'll have a little B story going on at home. Well, the B story here is that her mother and Francine, who works at the agency, both watch a specific cooking show hosted by a Mrs. Welch. It's the Colonial Cooking Show. And they make all kind of patriotic dishes like Pilgrim's Peach Puff, Pears, Paul Revere, Valley Forge, Flapjacks, and good old Yankee Doodle pot pie. But Amanda, when she gets involved with this case, it's because she figures out that the Mrs. Welch cooking lady is giving secret codes to her nefarious operatives on TV through the recipes. So they weave in her domestic situations with the spy case. I wonder, and I hope, that this is going to be done throughout the series, because it's kind of ingenious the way they weave in the domestic life and this.
So Mrs. Welch is KGB.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scene was the leak, but didn't know it, right?
Didn't know it because
she was being drugged and
Mrs.
giving
Welch
information.
Was giving her private cooking lessons
private
and drugging her.
She
Francine
was
spilling the beans. Babs was spilling the beans.
And not knowing it.
And then Mrs. Welch was giving out the information to the operatives of where the agents were going to be and what they were doing. And that's how they were staying a step ahead of them. Really good. Okay.
That's
so,
a good story.
I want to read a review that I found online about this show. It is no exaggeration to say the pilot episode of Scarecrow and Mrs. King is one of the most brilliant hours of 1980s television you will ever watch. Leaning into both comedy and drama, the housewife slash spy dynamic gets a boost from a great supporting cast, overall solid production values, good performances by an easy on the eyes cast, and some flashes of genuine wit and satire concerning the show's mix of Reagan-esque spying and suburban romance sitcoms. Okay, so that's what critics have written about it. But what do we think? So let's talk about it. It's a different twist from regular crime-fighting shows.
It is.
Remember our podcast, Old TV with a New Twist, episode 21. You and I broke down a lot of the old crime shows.
Did.
So I want you to weigh in. How does this stack up?
It does not stack up as a crime show. It's not a crime show. It's a spy show. It's James Bond-esque, not Reagan-esque.
Okay.
It's more James Bond-esque. I think it's a well-written show. It's very good for the 80s. I think it could stand up today for sure. There's so many storylines you could probably, so many directions you could go with new storylines. But it's more of a spy action comedy kind of thing. They do solve a crime, but nobody was murdered. I mean, they're not solving the murders of their agents.
Yes, they are.
That's not the point. The whole show is them trying to find the leak. And in the process, these guys are getting murdered. These agents are getting murdered. But that's not what they're focusing on, right?
Murders are occurring. They've got to stop
occurring.
The murders. Yeah, they solve the murders.
It's not the typical, in my opinion, it's not the typical like the shows that we reviewed, Columbo, Streets of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. What else we did?
The Hardy Boys.
The Hardy Boys. Those are typical, okay, whodunit kind of thing. This is not your
Barnaby
traditional.
Barnaby Jones, yeah.
This is not your traditional whodunit. It's a little different.
But isn't that what makes it good? Because
yeah.
You can't just have a million shows with the same premise. This
Correct.
This has got that little kick to it.
And it's a lot about the crazy antics they're getting into. These yeah. other crime shows we watch, there's no antics going on really that people are.
Yeah.
That's the side story.
Yeah. But the good, what I like about it is the dichotomy, because he wants mm-hmm. to be this serious spy and he's dragged right. into this antics with this crazy housewife and she's mm-hmm. funny
right.
in it. But I, because we laughed at times, we were on the edge of our seat ish mm-hmm.
yeah.
at times.
Yeah.
But I like the look and feel of it. Mm-hmm. Remember how I always say I like Murder, She Wrote, because
right.
she's in her kitchen with her checkered tablecloth. It's got a warm mm-hmm. feeling. That was. Instead of saying 80s, I'm just going to say Reagan-esque.
Right.
Also,
right.
that had that Reagan-esque feeling. But just a warm, you know, mom's in the kitchen cooking, you know, cooking the Yankee Doodle pot pie.
Grandma's in the kitchen.
And the kids are home. Yeah, her mom.
right,
her mom.
Right.
And what's her name? Amanda's mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, bugging her daughter about when you get. It's just so homey.
Mm-hmm.
But then you throw in this spy element because they're showing her at home. And then they're showing him jumping off of roofs of trains and getting beat up and everything. And then. I keep wanting to call Scarecrow Snowman. If I call him Snowman, I'm sorry. Snowman's getting beat up in the street and dodging mm-hmm. bullets and chase. And then these two worlds collide,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she literally like goes from a Boy Scout meeting
yeah,
to
a den mother.
Yeah. She's dressed in her den mother's outfit to car chases and fighting off the criminals. So I like how that happens.
They did a good job.
I think that's
with
extremely
that.
Clever mm-hmm. and well-written. And that's the hook.
That's hook.
What makes this different.
Right.
It isn't a group of detectives trying to solve this.
Right.
This is a serious spy mm-hmm. for an agency
right.
with the U.S. government, high officials, and this housewife. It just,
mm-hmm.
that's the little hook. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, because, you know, it's a man and a woman. It's
right.
a good looking man. It's a good looking woman. You throw yeah. together a good looking man, good looking well, woman. Stuff's going to happen. Did you sense romantic tension?
Not yet.
Do you see that coming?
No. I think you could probably see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see it in this episode, I don't think. Maybe towards the end, I think she's more interested in the spy stuff than she is in the guy.
Okay, well, let me do this. I know how much you like multiple choice.
Yes.
So.
Love multiple choice.
Why did she get involved in this case? I'm going to give you four, okay?
Okay.
Number one.
I have a reason, but go ahead.
She's bored with her life and just craves adventure.
Ding, ding, ding.
Number two. Wait a minute. Number two. She just cared about this human. She saw that he was going to be in danger, so she wanted to help him. Number three, this is a matter of national security, and she wanted to serve her country. Or number four, he's hot, and she's attracted to him. What propelled her?
I think 80% A.
Yes.
Bored, divorced,
mm-hmm.
you know, single mother, housewife.
The weatherman ain't interesting
doesn't
at all.
Have a job, nothing to do. Absolutely. Guy's good looking, yes, but... A woman just doesn't get involved with some strange guy.
Yeah.
Just because he's cute or hot, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
I think she was more or less bored.
Right.
Now, she might get to know the guy and she likes him. I think it's going to happen. I haven't seen yeah. any of these episodes,
right.
but I would assume further along down the series.
We'll discuss that when I get
to
the trivia.
They sort of do that, but yeah.
But
not yet.
I'm with you. I did not notice it yet.
No.
As a matter of fact, he was kind of frustrated with her.
Yeah, he says goodbye.
Through some of it, four times.
You're out.
He was trying to get rid of her.
Right.
And she... Like you, I think she's just, the excitement
Crazy.
Is drawing her in and
right.
the adventure more than his hotness.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
For now, at least.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
We agree with that.
Yep.
Before we go on to talking about the characters and the scenes, there's two things I want to say that I noticed about this show. Number one, they really make use of the Washington location.
They do.
Several times there were scenes where you could see like the Jefferson
Go
Memorial
ahead.
In the back, the Washington Monument, the mm-hmm. Capitol. No, I mean, you really... see it. And you and I, you know, because we've visited several studios in Hollywood, mm-hmm. we're always looking to see if we can tell if it's on location or if mm-hmm. it's filmed at a studio back lot or on a set. And Ted
mm-hmm.
saw.
Got an eagle eye for that thing.
He yeah. saw this one location. He goes, I think that's where we were on the Warner lot where they filmed, because they filmed this scene. And they also filmed the beginning scene of Spider-Man
there. Right?
Yeah. And when I looked it up, it was. So it was, part of this was filmed right where we were standing.
Yeah. That's true.
So cool. And the second thing I wanted to say is the house where they filmed the Colonial Cooking Show. It's that big white mansion. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at that. I'm like, now I recognize that scene of that house. It is Gary and Abby Ewing's house from Knott's Landing.
Okay.
I'm like, God, it looks just, it has to be. It has to be. Hmm. Looked it up. Yep.
It
that's
is.
It. It's the location. It's the Sandstone Horse Sales Ranch on Hidden Valley Road in Thousand Oaks, California. Hmm. See, so we both have eagle eyes for those locations.
Yeah, I know that look. That house looked familiar to me, but I may have seen one episode of Knott's Landing, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not watch that show, so.
Yeah. I recognize that house from Knott's Landing.
She may have forced me to watch an episode of that too, y'all. I'm just kidding. She doesn't force me to watch anything.
No, I don't. Thank you.
It's true.
I watch more of your stuff than you
That's
watch of mine, to be honest.
True. Yes. That's true.
There we go. Thank you for admitting that.
That is true.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, everybody, and then we're going to come back to talk about our impressions of the character. And we're back, and we're going to talk about the characters.
And I'm still here.
He complained in the break that he wasn't talking a lot, and he fashioned himself as the eye candy of the podcast, which it's not a video podcast, so I'm the only one who can see
you. I don't know what to say to that. You're and, like,
well, no, he's very good looking.
Yeah, whatever.
okay. What do you think of Scarecrow?
What do I think of Scarecrow?
Let's talk about the characters.
We talked about him a little while ago. I think he's frustrated with her, I think.
Okay.
He used her because she was there at the time. It's all right. He had. But he is a serious spy. He does not want to get involved with anybody. I don't remember. Is he divorced? Did his wife die? I don't remember. They talked about that, I think.
No, they didn't. They talked about her.
They mentioned someone in his past. Oh, no, his friend. His partner. They were talking about partners. That's right. So he works alone. And he does not want a partner. Least of all, probably some housewife who really doesn't know what she's doing. But
now, as the female of this podcast, I have to say, he's a very good-looking man, obviously. He's your basic hero type. But there were a dime a dozen back then. You had Magnum, P.I., you had the Miami Vice guys. You had Dan Tana on Vegas.
Right.
You had the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, well,
I got to always talk about the Hardy Boys.
That was
Boys.
Way before the 70s, though.
I know, but I got to throw them
early
in. 70s. Because Parker Stephen is the most gorgeous human being ever put on this earth. Well, the most gorgeous man. Notwithstanding the eye candy sitting across from me right now.
I could look, I'm comfortable in my skin. Parker. I could say the guy was a good looking guy.
This is 1977, though. I was 16.
I
okay. It was, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, but I'm like you. He was high strung. He was serious about his job. So, yeah. So there's that. Okay. Now, Mrs. King, I thought this was a greatly developed character. Or was it good acting? Because I thought you could look at her face and see what she was thinking. You know, like, you know, or she's fooling you because she's looking at recipes and she's blow drying a chicken or whatever she's doing and she's vacuuming and doing housework, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But yet she's smart enough to solve the case and save Scarecrow's life. So,
yeah, I think she's
interesting.
She's a good actress.
Yeah.
I think that's part of selling it, right? I think she did a good job doing that.
Right.
But I agree. I think she's just a bored housewife. And I think that came across. It was believable to me.
Right.
The only thing that's not believable in this is that someone would go off with a stranger. That was my first impression. A single Mormon is not going to take a package from a strange guy.
A Mormon? Don't
single
bring religion
woman.
Into this. All that she said a single Mormon.
Wait a second.
Like, what does religion have to do with
when I,
go ahead.
Because I had never seen any of these episodes, right? But when I first saw that scene, I was like, there's no way a woman is just going to take a package. And she's like, what do you want me to do? There's no way a woman is going to do that. That is not believable. But when you get further into the story, and you see her character and how, you know, she's got nothing going on, really. She doesn't have a job. She's got two kids. She's divorced. She's got the mom living at the house. It makes sense, though. But she makes that believable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she wants to do.
Yeah. Francine at the agency, Babs. I just have one thing about that. Mm-hmm. Does she have a crush on Scarecrow? And seems kind of jealous of Amanda when Amanda starts coming in the agency at the end.
I thought that same thing. Yeah.
Okay.
I think she
does.
It's
not obvious, though.
Not obvious. It's not blatant.
No.
Even at the end, though, she teases Scarecrow and says, you guys make a cute couple or you make a nice couple or something like that.
Yeah.
When they ask her at the end of the show to be, you know, when the boss, I forget his name, when he tells Scarecrow we can use her, you know?
Yeah.
And Scarecrow says he likes to work alone, and Babs chimes in, basically says, oh, you guys are a good couple or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Because you know what? Sure. That was supposed to be in the end of the recap of the episode, was that at the end, she goes in the agency and like, well, maybe we can use you.
Right.
So she's going to start working for them, but she has to keep it all a secret from her family.
Right.
So I think that sets up the show in that she's going to, you know, her mom's not going to know what she's doing.
Like, right.
And she's out solving all these crimes and saving the world, you know, while.
Yeah, she's always running off.
Home in time for dinner. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling at the agency it's going to be a little bit, because I think Babs is going to be jealous.
You think?
Well, I think they set that up a little bit. They hint at it.
A little bit.
Right? Like you said, it's not blatant.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be another little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our favorite or memorable scenes. Tell me about what scenes stick out in your mind.
I think a scene that sets the stage, right? Because up until this scene, I think Amanda didn't know what was going on and who this guy was. She thought he was a criminal. She didn't know what was in the box. But they're at the they're at a party when he's in a tux and all that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she makes a comment. Or he makes a comment or something. She says, I thought only spies and Nazis said that. And he says, well, I'm not a Nazi. That's the moment she realizes he's a spy.
Right.
So that sets up the show, I think. That sets up all the series, that she realizes he's a spy and now she knows what she's into.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, that's a good scene. But I have a funny scene.
Okay.
The funniest line in the whole freaking thing.
Okay.
And I don't know if you agree with me. When she says, Philip, do not hit your brother in the head with a bag of trash.
I got that here.
Or hit your brother in the head with trash.
With trash. I got that in here.
I mean, it's a spy comedy kind of thing, but that's a very funny line. I thought that was funny.
Once again, this plays into the hook of this show.
The mother. Right.
She's talking to this secret agent about a package that could get them killed.
Right.
Could get him killed for sure. Could save the, whatever it is, FBI, CIA from people being murdered. But yeah, she's got to keep these kids from hitting each other with trash.
It's serious business. Government secrets and... Yeah, you can be in a lot of trouble.
I love that little dichotomy there. And I think that's what makes this show so extra special.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And the only thing I love, just because I thought it was so cool, Scarecrow gets beat up, obviously, in the first 5 minutes. And then the next morning, he goes home. He's all beat up. He goes in his house. He goes in his bedroom to change his clothes. He opens the door and he goes in his closet.
Yes.
And the back wall of his closet, behind his clothes, an elevator door opens. And he's at the agency, and they wait in there with a little cart, and they take him all through the halls of the agency. I thought that was so
behind the
cool.
house, behind his closet.
It's connected to his closet, and it's this big, giant, looks like the Pentagon in there. You know, I'm like, holy crap. What, you know, it's like, because he walks into this little quaint Georgetown looking townhouse.
And that's brownstone kind of thing.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. Once again.
Yeah, a little far-fetched, but...
But cool spy stuff.
It's kind of like... What was that? What was the spy show? Get Smart.
Oh,
kinda goofy kind of stuff like that.
You think Snowman had a phone in
Snowman?
His shoe? I mean, see? You think Scarecrow had a phone in his shoe?
He might have a phone in his heel, yeah. That's funny.
Now, I always like to ask this about old shows. Is it conspicuously old-fashioned, and why? In other words, can you look at this show and immediately tell it's from the 80s, and how can you tell?
The clothes.
Okay. That's the first
thing. I think the clothes. Yeah. You can't tell, I think. I mean, she's driving a station wagon, right?
You don't see those anymore.
Like from Christmas Vacation or the vacation movies, the little station wagon they drive. I think just the hair and the clothes.
Okay.
I think the storyline, again, I said it has staying power. That theory, that theme could probably go over today.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the Russians and the KGB.
It wouldn't be. You couldn't do that.
It might be ISIS and Al-Qaeda. You know what I mean? Serious. No, it would be. Who's the biggest threat now? Who's the biggest threat now? It's not the Russians
and
the KGB. Yeah.
Correct.
You'd have to tweak it, but it's the same thing.
But I think just the clothes make it look 80s. It's not the dialogue or anything, I don't think.
See.
What did you think?
Me, it's... Well, obviously, yeah, the hair. He wears just tuxedos and stuff that he looks mighty fine in.
There you go.
But the house, the decor of the house to me spoke more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The furniture, the kitchen, the way it was, just all that kind of stuff.
And her clothes looked 80s, but I don't understand why she dressed like a grandma all the time. Well, I mean, if she's a single mother, I mean, how old do you think she was supposed to be?
I would imagine in her 30s, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, her kids are 10,
yeah,
8 or 10. So, yeah, if she was supposed to be in her 30s, even in the 80s, Did people dress like that in the '80s? Well,
I think her clothes were definitely Reagan-esque.
They were '80s clothes.
Yeah.
But it's clothes my grandmother wore in the '80s. Not a 30-something-year-old woman,
I think. So?
Long skirts and big poofy collars and things. Maybe it's just me.
I didn't see that. I thought she was dressed just
I'm not up on my women's fashion of the '80s.
No, you're not. No, you're not. And so, like, is this show lasting? Like, could it stand up in time? And I think, and I'm going to tell you this in all my research, people are still talking about this show today. There's a big blog that reviews all the episodes and recaps things and goes into it. There is a Facebook page called The Best Television Show of the 80s, dedicated to this series.
Wow.
So it didn't just fade into obscurity like David Cassidy, Man Undercover, which was actually a series, guys. Look it up.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, that's the point. Never heard of it.
Right.
But this one stands up and it has tons of fans. And I got to admit, I'm a new fan. I like it.
There you go.
I like it a lot. So do you think it holds up?
I think you could probably have this exact same story today and it would probably play well. But yeah. It would need to be a little more graphic. You know what I mean? The violence and kind of thing. People are just more.
You see, it held my interest without it, but I'm different.
Well,
I'm different than you, you know?
But again, we talk about this all the time on this podcast, is that you look through it through the lens of the 80s.
Yeah.
So it was fine for the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it would not fly. People are desensitized to violence in some sense.
It's a shame. Yeah.
It is a shame. It's sad. I have that in my notes. Sadly, it would need to be more graphic. But people just, this is what they want to see.
Then I wouldn't watch it. Then maybe a lot of the people wouldn't watch. I don't know.
Over the past couple of days, we just finished watching History of the Mob.
Yeah, he had me watching some stuff, y'all. Jeez. We're talking about how it's from the 80s. And as we know, I am in the middle of an obsessive 80s TV binge right now with the show Falcon Crest. I am watching all 9 seasons and I am in the middle of a frantic 80s TV binge.
How's that going? You doing well?
During the day when he's at work. I've retired already. He has not. So I do all of my watching of my things when he's not here. But I tell him when he's here, we'll watch what he wants.
That's why, just to explain,
that's why I have to watch mafia stuff.
A little earlier you said you watch more of what I want than I watch of what you want. And that's why you watch what you want all week.
Day. Yeah, all day.
Saturday and Sunday, it's me.
Yeah, and nighttime.
And nighttime, yeah.
So yeah, but I'm very immersed in the '80s right now. I'm loving the '80s, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about rating. IMDb gave this episode a 7.8 out of 10. What say you?
I have two ratings.
Oh Lord, you gotta make it complicated.
Well, because it's it was billed, I think, as a spy action comedy sort of program. I saw that on IMDb somewhere. So I'll give it about a 7 for drama, suspense. For comedy, overall, about a 5. Well, but the line with the trash, hitting him in the head with the trash, is a 10.
But here's the thing. It's not a comedy.
It's not a comedy.
It's a crime show. So what do you, as a crime-solving spy show, what do you rate it?
7.5.
Okay, that's what we're going to do. Because my spreadsheet only has one box.
One box.
Put your rating in.
Okay.
All right.
7.5.
I gave it an 8. Great mix of characters, the locale, the writing. It just didn't get a 10 because there's just a little something missing there. And like I said, this is a pilot. Maybe it'll get it later. But fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Many possibilities. Many, many possibilities. Many monies.
Many, many money. Many monies.
Bob's gave me many. You have to edit that out. Bob's gave me many monies.
Our granddaughter wanted to get ice cream and her sister said, "You don't have money." And she says, "I have many monies that Pops give me." Everybody looks at my husband like, "Pops, you're giving him money?" He's like, "No."
I might have slipped her a couple quarters or something.
Pops give me many monies. Okay, here we go. Mom's useless trivia.
All right.
This show had 4 Emmy nominations and only 1 win for achievement in music composition for a series. Hmm. It never won for writing. It never won for any of the actors, which is odd to me. So, yeah. Now, the boyfriend, Dean the Weatherman, his face isn't shown. But if you notice in one scene when him and her in front of the fireplace and the kids walk in, she's talking to the kids and you can see him behind her. You can see his face a little.
It's kind
of blurry, but I guess they never really fully show him.
I didn't notice that.
Now, in the 3rd season, Scarecrow and Mrs. King develop romantic chemistry, culminating in a kiss for the season finale.
Wow.
They get married in the fourth season, and Amanda turns back into a suburban housewife.
Mm. So let me ask you this, though. Did they know it was ending when they got them married, or they intended to continue?
They did not know. I'm going to go on to tell you about why it ended.
Okay.
But they did. And I don't know if that romantic chemistry was kind of amped up a little bit, because I think about shows like Cheers.
Right.
Like Sam and Diane, you saw that from
the
jump. I mean, right there, you saw it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you watched Moonlighting with Maddie and David.
Uh-huh.
That sexual chemistry, that romantic chemistry was there from the beginning. This, you don't see it.
Right.
When and how it's going to develop, I don't know. But it does obviously develop, because they do wind up getting married. Now it says, however, so they did get married in season four. However, while the filming of season four was underway, Kate Jackson was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, no.
Her treatments resulted in the reduction of her character that led to alterations of the scripts that ultimately affected the show and caused its cancellation at the end of season four. Kate Jackson owned a 51% stake in this show, which allowed her more control in shaping the ongoing growth of Mrs. King, and from being an unemployed housewife to being an agent in training in the later episodes.
I saw that on IMDb. That she had that stake. So
yeah,
she
had a lot of control.
The character went.
Yeah. So that's all I have. I thoroughly enjoyed this. We watched it twice. And I enjoyed it both times.
I did too. I think it's a show that I could start watching now probably and enjoy. We watch a lot of old TV around here, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Hence the podcast.
Well, it is free on Tubi TV. If you have the Tubi app, it's fantastic. A lot of free, good, classic TV. Don't have Falcon Crest on it, but but they do have Scarecrow and Mrs. King for you to watch. So I want to thank Jody for suggesting this, because I would never have watched this show. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Very good. I agree.
Yeah, very good.
100%.
And really sadly, we didn't get to work Betty White into this anywhere.
Oh, Betty White.
And we didn't work Seinfeld in.
That's
so
okay.
What
we
gonna
just
say?
Said it.
What we going to say to the
you
folks?
You still do that?
So what we going to say to the folks instead of goodbye, we're going to say.
I haven't been on this podcast in so long, but I'll say it. Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, everybody.
This is Michelle, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Old TV with a New Twist. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on Spotify or on your Apple Podcast app. And join our Facebook group, Old TV with a New Twist Podcast Group. And tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about, and we'll keep you informed of what's to come. We'll be back next month with a whole new episode of Old TV with a New Twist.